I think they like you, Steve.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go.
And welcome. 609-248 shopping days left until Christmas. Don't be the last one to get yours done. You look out your window this morning, that's snow. It's got to end eventually. Doesn't it?
Hopefully today it's the end.
Temperatures projected to be in the 60s next week. Okay.
Allegedly.
We'll see. But yeah, it's sloppy and wet and wintry today. But why wouldn't it be? It's April 19th.
The sun's coming out today, though.
Where you go?
Hey.
That's it.
Hey, we had sun yesterday before that blizzard.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about. Another busy show today, as you might guess, and we'll even include John Williams on it. You know, he's hard to book. He's not easy to get, but we talked to some people. And John Williams, a longtime doppelganger, Arsenio Hall, will be on the show today as well.
It's like twins.
Arsenio and John, very, very similar. Senator Durbin, haven't been on the show in a long time. He'll be on this morning. Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein's back from his six-month ski trip. Nick, in just a few minutes on the movies, but let's start with the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, no one alive has ever experienced Chicago as cold as this on April the 20th. The coldest April in 137 years. Now, unless you are 137, you're not 137, Dave. You may feel it occasionally, but that's the kale. 137 years ago, that's the last time it was this cold.
Mm-hmm.
137 years ago.
That's just temperature. That's not snow.
So the snow is just April 20th, a bonus. It's April 19th. The snow is what a bonus?
The snow is a bonus. You're just talking cold temperatures.
Yes, right? I am. Doesn't 137. That was that? 1881? 1881. I remember in 1881 when Ulysses S. Grant said, I'm not sure about this global warming thing. He tweeted that out that day. I don't know if you guys remember that. Unbelievable. But 60s next week. Woo!
Mike Hammernick just tweeted out a graphic that says the last 6 days the average temperature has been 39 degrees. The next 6 days the average will be 57 degrees.
Yes.
That's what I'm talking about.
We like him.
That's right.
If we're celebrating 50s, then it's really been cold.
Well, you know, we always, as a cliche, we say in Chicago spring is about 45 minutes.
Yes.
You know, just spring and then it's 100 degrees. This year it's going to be that way.
Yeah, there's going to be no spring.
60 next week, 90 the week after. Right. And that's fine. It's completely fine. Quack.
Quack.
Boy, Puerto Rico. Mm. How do you not feel for these folks? There's portions of Puerto Rico that have not had electricity since last September. Mm-hmm. Last September. Yesterday, a full island blackout, 1.5 million. And again, folks, these are American citizens. 1.5 million people without power. 300,000 remain without power this morning. And that's after 7 months and, I don't know, what, $2.5 billion in repair work have been underway? Of course, they had that weird stop-start thing with some company from Montana that was apparently picked because they were friends with somebody in the Trump administration. But of the 3.4 million residents in the hurricane-ravaged island, everybody was getting there.
Yeah.
They were getting there. There was a chunk that still didn't have power. And yesterday, island-wide, and what, 300,000? Is that number right this morning?
Yep, 300,000. And it apparently, there was the outage was set off when a tree limb fell on a power line.
You know, if one tree on one power line could shut down the entire island, that's a problem.
And CBS just tweeting that the contractor involved in that was fired. Not that that helps anything now, but
if we
there
don't have any tree limbs fall, if there are no fat squirrels, we are in good shape.
Mm-hmm. You know, the other part of this story is we're just about a month away from hurricane season.
Ah, fantastic.
June 1st.
Fantastic.
19,000 had power, though, because they were at the stadium in San Juan watching the Indians and the Twins, and they played that game last night.
The people showed up.
There were people there.
Well, there were lights on.
There were lights on because they went with their backup systems.
But there's a limit of generators and stuff throughout a lot of the island as well still. Can you imagine, you know how the whining we would be involved with if we didn't have power for 6 days?
Oh, my God, but 6 hours?
6 months?
Are you kidding?
I can't even fathom this. I can't imagine this at all.
Is it 6 months or 8 months? It's almost the end of 7 months.
It was in the fall.
Yeah, it was September. It was
September, October, yeah.
So we're coming up on 7 months.
Without power, yeah.
We would be bitching till, I mean, you couldn't, it would be endless.
Yeah.
And these American citizens sit there and have to put up with this. It's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Our fridge broke last Thursday.
What?
Yeah, and we just got one delivered.
The humanity.
Yeah, and it was a train wreck. It was not something I enjoyed.
Tension in the house, through the roof.
How have you been at work the past few days?
Oh. My mind was elsewhere, Andrea. Oh.
Yeah. Did you have your food in the sink with ice cubes, or how did you survive?
Coolers. We used a couple coolers, yeah.
Wow. Oh, my God.
But not ideal.
What is this, 1985? Next. Democrats still trying to find the votes to override Governor Rauner's gun store licensing veto, which frankly was just a move to get him through the primary. Why this is still going on and hasn't been fixed and hasn't been pushed to be fixed by the governor, I don't know. But the Democrats trying to find the votes for the override means they have to pull some Republicans in. And why Republicans would still be sticking behind this is insane as well. Backed by the police superintendent, mm-hmm. the mayor here as well. But even a number of prominent downstaters go, of course this makes sense.
Sure. Cardinal Supich again yesterday holding another news or media availability. Appealing to please override this. Overriding it would take 36 votes in the Senate and 71 in the House. So that's quite a few.
That effort continues, and the end of the Castro era in Cuba. President Raul Castro is going to step down today, handing power over to someone outside his family. The first time in 70 years, I believe, that the Castro family has not been in charge. Raul Castro, his brother Fidel died, and he is not a young man as well. He's mid-80s, I think, and he's stepping aside.
He is. The country's 57-year-old first vice president. His name is Miguel Diaz-Canel.
And what that means for the relationship with the United States remains to be seen. And the United States Senate voted to change its rules on babies in the chamber. I was in a band called Babies in the Chamber, wasn't I?
Yeah, I think so.
Played Lollapalooza.
A lot of screaming in the band. But
Tammy Duckworth can now bring her new baby girl to work. That is the first sitting senator to be a mother and a senator in office, and she can now bring the baby to work. I guess I didn't know that was a thing. Did you know that was a thing? I didn't know that was a thing.
I didn't either. No. Orrin Hatch, it was funny when they were discussing it, though. He said, having 10 babies on the Senate floor would be a delight.
Did he say that sarcastically?
I don't know. It's a quote, and I'm reading it as it's written, so it could go either way.
And didn't Marco Rubio say we have enough babies on the floor already?
That's
something,
a good quote.
Something like that.
Very
that's a good,
good.
Quote.
And finally, no limit to the stupid. A Canadian woman Instagrammed her cocaine smuggling trip. Did you see this girl? Beautiful girl. Very, of 2018. You know, with the whole Kardashian, I've got to take every picture possible of me. I can't walk by a reflective surface without looking at me.
Right.
Her name is Melina Robert. She's 24. She pled guilty to smuggling 209 pounds of cocaine, mostly in 2016. She's going to get 8 years in jail for her Instagram good time.
Oh, fantastic.
Her accomplice is someone named Isabel Legay. She's 29. They documented their travels by posting photos on their Instagram accounts during a weeks-long cruise ship that stopped at 17 ports where they picked up cocaine in almost all of them.
Wow. So did they do it as a...
Oh, did we get a picture of the new coke? Get a picture of the new Coke. Let me stand by it.
Did they do a picture? Did they do it as a My Story, or was it just stills?
I don't know. But they should have put it on Friendster or MySpace, because they actually put it somewhere where people could see it. There you go. That's your top six at six right there.
That's all today for the top six at six.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Nick DiGilio next, 720 WGN.
He is Nick at night, DiGilio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking. I need to know what Nick is.
623, Nick DiGilio joins us now. Each week at this time, we ask Nick, are there things we can do outside of the house? Are there places we should go? Or should we just hunker down? You know, it's still winter out there, Nick.
Yeah, man, oh man.
All right, I Feel Pretty. That's the new Amy Schumer movie?
Yeah, Amy Schumer stars as a woman who, you know, has been sort of body shamed, and she feels very inadequate. Until she is in a spin class, she falls off the bike, smashes her head, and after she bumps her head, she wakes up and thinks that she has a perfect body and is model thin, and it gives her, you know, a lot of confidence, even though on the outside she hasn't changed at all.
This is a good premise, a good premise about body shaming, but I have to say, and Nick, you're old enough to remember this, they stole this idea from the Flintstones.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The Flintstones. Yeah, Fred's bowling ball was on the closet shelf. Fred opens the door, and the bowling ball falls and hits Fred on the head, and he turns into Frederick Von Flintstone, aristocrat. And it's not until he hits his head again that he goes back to regular Fred. But I'm telling you, at least give the Flintstones credit. That's all.
Oh, yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, it's a really good idea, and an idea that's very timely. My problem is I don't think Amy Schumer's funny. So that's
an issue.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
an issue. I always felt that way, too. This actually just maybe the trailer just gives everything away. This actually looks kind of funny.
I'm wondering, is this really going to appeal to women, or are women going to be put off by this?
Oh, I think it's funny.
Okay.
Again, seeing the trailers, I thought this looks interesting.
Well, you know, I mean,
you don't want interesting in comedy. You want funny in comedy.
I think it's a great premise. I really do. And I think it's kind of long overdue that this kind of body shaming stuff is taken on, you know, in a comedic form. The trailers did not make me even crack a smile. And very rarely does Amy Schumer do anything but make me groan. So I don't know. I mean, I think it's a great idea. I hope it works, but I just don't think she's funny.
Item number two on the list of things to leave the house for, Super Troopers 2. I don't know. That's not going to get me out of the house.
It's going to get me out of the house. I thought the first one was really funny. And this is from the group of guys known as Broken Lizard. And Super Troopers was this weird little comedy they made, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. Even longer than that, almost 20 years ago. And it was released, and it's about these, you know, these cops who have all kinds of wacky adventures. They were highway patrol officers. Now they've been moved to law enforcement in a Canadian town, so they're Mounties as well. And it's about their wacky misadventures. Now, the first movie came out, it didn't do anything at the box office. Like, it made no money at all. But the cult following for this movie when it was released on DVD and when it was released on cable is massive. And people have watched it over and over again. It's one of those movies that's quoted a lot in frat houses. And it's also embraced by people who enjoy marijuana, which is why it's released on 420.
Does that mean grandpa as well in the medical marijuana crowd? Will they like it as well?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the trailer made me laugh, and I thought the first one was really funny, and I think Broken Lizard has made some really funny movies, and I think their funniest movie ever is another movie that didn't make any money. It was called Beer Fest with the Broken Lizard guys. Will Forte was in it, Donald Sutherland. That movie is hilarious if you've not seen it. So I think Super Troopers 2, it'll be interesting to see how it does, considering that, you know, that first movie didn't make any money at the box office, but it'll be interesting to see what it does this weekend.
Is that the one you're taking your parents to?
No. The next one is what we're going to see.
Traffic. TRAFFIK. Not to be confused with the amazing Benicio del Toro Michael Douglas drug movie of many years ago.
Yeah, maybe that's why they're spelling it this way, because they don't want to get it confused with the Steven Soderbergh movie. I'm not sure. but it's about a two couples who are about to go on a lovely little weekend up in a cabin in the woods, and they stop off at a gas station, have a little run-in with motorcycle gang, crazy motorcycle gang, who drops something in one of the ladies' purses, and then when they get to the house, the motorcycle gang starts to terrorize them, and it's this thriller about this motorcycle gang terrorizing these two couples.
And do they fight back?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
And who are the stars?
Paula Patton, who is a much underutilized actress.
I agree.
I think she's great.
So do I.
And she's in it. Rosalind Sanchez is in it. Missy Pyle, William Fichter. The trailer looks pretty cool. It looks like a thriller. It's a basic idea. People trapped in cabin being terrorized. It's been done a million times. But, it's an effective thing. And I have an issue with, you guys probably know this already, I have a phobia of anything involving home invasion. Yeah. It's one of my recurring
nightmares. I don't know anybody that's fond of it. Anybody fond of a good home invasion?
Not really.
No.
No, but when I was five, I witnessed somebody trying to get into our house in the back door, slamming.
That'll mess you up.
Nightmares about it. Yeah, so I like home invasion movies tend to freak me out more than any other kind of movies, and yet I am drawn to them. So that's why I'm kind of excited about this one. And I love Paula Patton. So.
Next Film Club screening is Used Cars. That's May 8th at the AMC Rosemont 18, part of your Zemeckis Fest.
Zemeckis Fest. Nothing but Zemeckis all summer. We're showing Back to the Future. We're showing Forrest Gump. We're looking to get Who Framed Roger Rabbit. But Used Cars is my favorite comedy. It's my favorite comedy of all time, and so I'm very excited to show that one.
That's Nick. See you on the radio.
Gotcha.
Back with you in the headlines. That's you being Andrea right after this on 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Should have seen the look on Mrs. Carlson's face when he said, "It's a keeper." Oh, cold enough for you?
Shut up, fat ass.
It's my good friend Walter Matthau. Just give me something. Grumpy old man. We did that movie. And when I say we, I mean Jack Lemmon, Walter Matthau, and me. 26 years ago?
Really?
Wow.
Holy cow.
It
seems like yesterday, though, doesn't it?
I gotta tell you, I don't want to throw a bunch of technical terms out here, but I just realized I am friggin' old.
Do you and the cast ever do reunion parties?
Burgess Meredith and I used to get together, play a little Mahjong. I don't even know what Mahjong is. At 6:42...
My pen just fell apart.
Dave, the famed wrestler Bruno Sammartino has passed after a long life. I believe he was 82.
82 years old.
I don't remember. I remember the name, but I wasn't into wrestling when I was a kid.
I wasn't either.
I think he was a good guy. I'm sure the texters will jump in and correct us if we're wrong, but I think
they
he was a
will.
Good guy.
Yes.
Bizarre story out of Missouri continues. This Missouri Governor Greitens. Is it Greitens or Greitens? I think it's Greitens.
Greitens.
Greitens? Okay. Greitens. Missouri Governor Greitens now faces additional felony charges other than the sort of troubling charges that he held a woman against her will, took naked pictures of her, and slapped her.
I would take the sword of out of there. Very troubling charges.
And he says he's not leaving office.
Right.
He's going to force what amounts to a statewide constitutional crisis in Missouri. Wasn't that nice of him?
Did you hear he said that, if people thought he should leave, he says that's ridiculous?
Yeah, how could he come up with such a notion? This is a guy with a good story, a military career, and came out of nowhere into politics and won. And people were saying, this is a guy who could be a presidential candidate down the road. Well, now he's just trying to avoid jail. It begs the question, is honor dead? Is honor completely gone where people do the right thing?
That's a really good question.
Because wouldn't you think after you're accused of kidnapping someone, taking pictures of them naked against their will and slapping them, wouldn't you think doing the right thing would be step aside?
You know what?
Get your life in order.
I know you asked that tongue-in-cheek and considering everything.
Well, I'm not asking tongue-in-cheek. Is honor dead?
Okay, well, here's the thing. Look at Nixon. If you want to go all the way back, Nixon resigned.
Yeah. When faced with the final answers, he did the right thing.
Right. And then Clinton, when he went through the similar proceedings, he finally had the news conference and then admitted it.
Right.
So what about today?
Would
Trump ever get up there and say, you know what, here's what I did?
No.
Right.
No.
There you go.
No. And is this an offshoot of that, or is this one and to itself? So I don't know, but I feel for the people in Missouri who have to figure that out now. And here's a bizarre story this morning. Former Trump advisor and the NSA head, H.R. McMaster's father, died in Philadelphia in a nursing home facility and is now being investigated as a murder. McMaster died on April 13th at Cathedral Village in a suburb of Philadelphia. He was receiving care there after suffering a stroke. The nursing home said he fell, hit his head, was put in a chair, and then he died. Investigators are saying, no, there's something else going on here. Some staff members apparently informed the McMaster family that records were falsified pertaining to his death. Philadelphia police have executed a search warrant at the facility this week. Cathedral Village spoke with local television there and stated they're fully cooperating. Village officials say they contacted the Department of Health the same day and have launched an investigation. They are saying, quote, we remain committed to the safety and welfare of all of our residents. A spokesperson for the Pennsylvania Attorney General said, we're working closely with Philadelphia's police department. The investigation is in its very early stages. This is a constant, constant concern if you love somebody that's in a nursing facility, whether it's, you know, a traditional nursing home or an assisted living facility. It's, are they getting what they need and are they being treated appropriately? And 99% of the time they are. But there are some bad apples in that business that are dangerous. And, you know, this appears to be, at least on the surface, a perfect example. You would hope the investigation would find that this was an accident. But this is not somebody to be trifled with. This is H.R. McMaster. And I believe he and those associated with him and the Philadelphia authorities will get to the bottom of this at this this particular facility. You have to believe, because of McMaster's abilities and connections and networks, that this is a well-thought-of facility. He wouldn't send his father just anywhere.
No.
So, very sad story.
Very sad.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Today's text question. We do a text question every day unless I forget, and then we do it another day. Today's text question is more of a statement, and you need to fill in the blank in the statement. Here's the statement. Oh, no, my neighbor's worse than that. My neighbor is way worse than that. You know that Ask Amy column?
Yeah, the advice column.
Yeah, here's the question. My husband and I live next to a married couple who are in their late 30s. Our condos are only about 12 feet apart. Some of the windows face each other. Now, you lived in high-rises in the city for years.
Oh, sure.
You're always looking into somebody's house.
Well, I try not to, yeah.
But that's what window treatments are for.
Exactly. Right? Yes.
Our neighbors removed all of their curtains and blinds about a year ago.
Uh-oh.
Now, I'm not sure why you removed them unless you're planning on replacing them. Mm-hmm. You know, we're redoing my house, and the windows and blinds are not on the windows currently, and it's weird.
Right.
You know, it is weird. The good news for my neighbors is I wear a full Wisconsin snowmobile suit at all times inside my house.
You don't wear like a muumuu or anything?
No.
Okay.
We absolutely try to avoid, the neighbor says, looking into their house with the no curtains. We've even angled our blinds to obstruct our view most of the time. But even walking through our house, you can see most of their house without even trying. And peripherally, that catches your eye.
It does, yeah.
You know? So the letter continues. A month ago, I caught a view of our neighbor in his living room. Husband was sitting on the sofa in the living room, completely nude, clearly in a sexual position. A few weeks later, my husband saw the exact same thing as he just looked outside to check the weather. We began to feel uneasy about... Now you begin to feel uneasy? We began to feel uneasy about the whole thing, like maybe they wanted to be seen. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They could go into their bedroom, so why were they doing it in front of their big, uncovered family room windows? These neighbors are always polite when we interact with them outside, but they appear to be a little freaky. I contacted our homeowners association complaining about their lack of window coverings. There's no regulation requiring it. They said unless we're seeing something obscene, there's nothing that can be legally done. We're not sure what to do. Feel like we ought to be able to look out our windows without being fearful of seeing our neighbors in a compromising situation. What do you think?
Time to move.
The statement is, oh, no, my neighbor is worse than that. Fill in the blank at 312-981-7200. And if you don't have a bad neighbor story, as always, I encourage you to make one up. You don't know what Amy said?
Yes.
Depending on where you live, your neighbor's activity could be indecent exposure and illegal. Yeah, I mean, I think most people know
that,
right?
Yeah, but you can't
If you're doing something in a window that can be seen outside by the public that breaks a law, you can be arrested.
But it's in your own home.
You can still be arrested.
I don't know. I'm going to look into that. No, because we had an incident.
You're going to look into what? Where the windows are down?
No, we had an incident in my building where we thought they were smoking a lot of pot or maybe even mass producing it. And then we talked to the homeowner association, and then they said, no, you can't just go into someone's
apartment because
you think that they're... So that's an illegal substance, or if they're growing marijuana
illegally.
Right, but
if the window's open and I'm walking by with a little kid. Let's say I'm walking by with Abigail. I'm walking by with Abigail, and Dave's getting freaky in the window. That can be considered a crime.
Okay, why did you have to use me as an example there?
Well, because I looked at you.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. If you don't like it, Dave, put window treatments between the two of us.
Don't look in the window, though. I don't think that, you know.
I mean, we have window treatments on the control rooms here.
Yeah, but we don't want to bother with those. Your neighbors might enjoy the sort of display they're putting on. You could write them a note saying, we request that you either get window coverings or take your nudity into a private room in another part of your home. That'll go well. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll go well. We and our guests have the right to look out our windows without being seeing something that cannot be unseen. My eyes! Understand, depending on your local statute, your own willingness to cooperate, you may have no recourse other than to block the view with your own window covering.
I don't know.
By the way,
just
new studio.
That's not the way life works. Of course, you're going to look
in
the window.
Arrested
okay,
for
you don't look
house.
In the windows of your neighbors.
All right, I won't.
No, I'm telling you, you don't. I'm asking you. You don't. Look
I don't.
In the windows
I face the lake, so I don't.
But if you had a window facing your neighbors, and you don't look into those windows, I'm not saying you look into what's going on.
I don't care what other people are
you
doing.
You see
in their house.
Activity, and it catches your eye.
Absolutely.
And in our new studios, we are looking directly at a couple of high rises. There's one on either side.
Imagine the hits we're going to get on our video feed as soon as we set the cameras up.
There's a hotel too, isn't there?
Hotel on one side and a high rise on the other.
Well, one of our management offices here, I don't say which one, it's Todd Manley's, faces the Intercontinental next door.
Right.
And there have been a number of times I've been sitting there for a meeting and you look up and there's somebody in the window doing the thing. And by the thing, I think you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I haven't
looking right back
that
at you. Thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, looking over, waving.
Yeah.
What's
I
up?
See you looking at me.
Hey, baby.
All right, so my neighbor's way worse than that. That's your text question, 312-981-7200 at 656. News coming up at 7. Eric Edelstein is back from his ski trip. Pat Brady never went skiing. They'll both join me in a moment. And Senator Durbin at 740 this morning on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
708, Steve Cochran Show, we continue, and joining me in studio now, Pat Brady. And Pat, your company's name is what?
Next Generation Strategies, thank you.
And social media, you can social media that up as well. And Eric Edelstein's back with a sunburn from his ski trip with his family. How was that?
It was great, although it looks like I could have just stayed in Chicago and skied.
You could have. Yeah, we're going to need slopes and hills. We're a little
short
on those.
We got those waste bunkers.
But we had the snow, right?
Actually, if it's not a little harder, you could just start here.
Yeah.
And just go right towards the Hancock. There's enough slope you could probably get going.
That's
it's at least cross-country skiing.
There you go. There you go.
Good to see both of you. And Senator Durbin will be on coming up in just a few minutes. I was asking before we get into the politics if you've got a really bad neighbor. 847, we're at the bottom floor of a two-story apartment. We can hear every fight as well as when they have sex. We're starting to chart it. The pictures on our wall shake. 309, our old neighbor won't give us eye contact. Has creepy dolls in his front window, and he changes them often. All of his bushes and trees in the front and backyard are plastic and fake. I don't know why that would make you nervous. Doesn't seem odd. 708, what if the guy standing in the window perfectly waving his hands at passers-by? That's what happens with my neighbor. Oh, I see. They're throwing out a potential. And you're a lawyer. If I'm doing something illegal in a window and you walk by, can I be arrested?
Depends. Eric's a lawyer, too.
I just play one on TV.
Doing what? Like smoking dope? Probable cause, it's pretty
hard to start with having
house.
Sex in the window and a family walks by with the kids.
That's not illegal.
Why is that illegal?
That's what I said.
It's because it's indecent exposure with an open
your
window.
Own home.
In your own home, yeah.
There are laws around the country that do cover this, fellas.
Where'd you
get your law degrees? Where Michael Cohen got his?
No. You can't
never said I was a good lawyer.
Something.
I just said I was a lawyer.
You can't be arrested for having sex in your own home.
Yeah, you can.
Well,
yeah,
listen, Eric, you try it out and report back next week.
Aye, aye, sir.
Here's another good idea, though. Tell the new neighbors you're filming and you want to know where to send the residual checks when you publish, right to their house or to an agent.
Huh? There you go. That's helpful.
My neighbor's way worse than that. 312-981-7200 is the number. You can text in. All right, let's start with the... by the way, I misspoke yesterday. I was talking about Madigan and said that the speakership vote was this week. It's the Democratic Party leadership vote, right?
Yeah, it's coming up in the next couple weeks. The Democrats and Republicans both do it sometime in May. Last night, the Republicans elected state Central Committee members, which those are the folks that elect the chairman. And the Democrats, I think, did it last week.
And the speaker votes in January?
The Speaker of the House, that's in January. Yeah. That's in the Illinois House. But the chairmanship vote is up in May.
So Madigan's obviously going to be chairman again.
Yeah, he had a good primary election night. Most of his people won.
Yep. Is it all about the money with the Democrats, Eric? Is it all about the money? What about me? What about us?
What about you, Steve?
Here's the thing. I wonder.
Need a hug from the Democrats?
I do, kind of, yeah. I brought this up last night. When are the Democrats collectively going to go, even if they love Madigan, collectively going to go, it's somebody else's turn?
Yeah. I mean, the problem is that the notion of collectively, that suggests an organized effort. It suggests coming together, having a... Well, I know, but you have to create that kind of change, you have to have some mechanism for doing it. Look, I think it's true at the national level. We talk about Pelosi and Steny Hoyer and Biden and, you know, putting aside how you feel about any of these leaders, it is, I think, a generational shift that's happening slowly. But, you know, the old regime always takes a long time to leave the stage.
Because the people who should be saying it's my turn aren't speaking loudly enough?
Well, and I think they don't necessarily have the power. They don't necessarily have the ability to build a coalition to do it. I think, you know, particularly in Illinois, old habits die hard, you know. And so, but look, I think change does come. I think it will come. We go back to those kids at Parkland as an extreme example. I think when change happens, it happens with a new generation. And
but here's the question. Does Mike Madigan have to die for there to be a change in the speakership?
I don't know what's in his head, how long he plans on staying or what he...
But what are you hearing from other Democrats? Are Democrats getting frustrated with him?
You know, I think there's been a level of frustration, but I think then there's also been a level of, look, he's been the guy standing in the doorway against Rauner. Yeah, Rauner spent $40 million going after him, making him, demonizing him and all that. And look, plenty of blame to go around. We've talked about it a lot on this show. But I also think that Madigan has done a lot to kind of stymie an agenda that is against what Democrats stand for. So, look, there's a mixed feeling about him in the state. There's no question he's going to be a huge issue in this fall campaign because Rauner will make him that issue. That's the cross current. That I think is the only hope Rauner has. I don't think it's going to work.
Oh, wait a minute. JB's running on a tax increase. That's going to help, too.
Oh, yeah, that, too. But,
yeah. Good call. But if Pritzker were to win, would he ever stand up to Madigan?
That's a good question. I think it's going to be a...
I don't think he has to.
What do you mean?
Why do you say that?
I mean, I think if JB wins, he actually has got the resources and the means to run his own shop.
Yeah, he could.
I mean, he could. I think a lot of it's a money thing, right?
Wait, what does that mean? I don't understand what you're saying. If Pritzker and Madigan are banging heads on something, even if it's behind closed doors, will Pritzker stand up and say, this is my opinion and I'm the governor?
No, I mean, he hasn't so far. And he actually, during the campaign, we made an issue of the fact that this is Madigan's guy. But I think he has an opportunity to be independent.
Yeah, I think
that's what I meant.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you're saying, what Pat's saying, is that Rauner had control over the Republican legislature in many ways because he had the power of the purse. He had that checkbook that he could run candidates against them. Pritzker isn't dependent on Madigan or anybody else to fund campaigns or his own political future necessarily. But he is dependent on moving anything through the legislature, on legislative leadership.
Well, Madigan typically, historically, does better with a Republican governor. I mean, he and Blagojevich and Emil Jones fought terribly 10, 15 years ago. So it's this time was a little different. I mean, he got along with George Ryan, he got along with Jim Thompson, to a certain extent, lesser extent, Jim Edgar.
Since this can't be all about the money, I mean, it can, but it can't be. Are they going to just, do you see both candidates just spending absorbent amounts of money on political ads this year?
Just beating each other over the heads with stacks of hundreds?
This is going to be, I'll say one thing that's a fact and one thing that's a prediction.
Okay.
Fact is, this will be the most expensive non-presidential race in American history. And my prediction is it will be the ugliest. It will be a race to the bottom.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah. So strap yourselves in, folks.
So because we get the benefit of that.
Should be fun.
I mean, they've already spent $150 million in the primary.
Yeah.
$150 million.
But it's a solid job. You know, you're going to make a couple hundred grand.
Exactly.
And
it will be unprecedented. I don't know if you agree.
Well, where else would we spend that money? I mean, can you think of anything else that money would go to? No.
Schools, education. It'd be great if they said, you know, if one of the candidates said, well, I'm not going to spend X amount of dollars on campaign ads. I'm going to put it toward the education fund or toward the pension fund or something.
How about every dollar spent, you have to match it with another dollar for education?
Something like that, yeah. Wouldn't that be great?
We should get on that, Pat.
Well, you know, here's there is a program for low-income kids to get out of these rotten schools, a scholarship program that was part of the spending reform package that was passed, and J.B. Pritzker wants to kill it. So if you want to give money to schools as scholarships to help kids get out of these schools, J.B. Pritzker, that's one who's, besides a tax increase, he wants to kill that scholarship
program. Or how about infrastructure? Put it toward infrastructure. Getting rid of the tolls, fixing the roads, fixing the bridges, just something. Magic.
Yeah, look, it sounds great. And as soon as you guys all go to the television stations and you say, why don't you give free airtime to candidates and let them get their messages
out.
Well,
let's not go crazy.
Then they will
now
have.
You're talking nonsense.
They can use their resources for public good rather than for political purpose. But look, we all know the reason the cost of campaigns is so high is a function of buying television airtime. And, you know, it does pump money in the economy. There are jobs that are created and all that. But yeah, it's obscene when it's $150 million in a primary.
You think we'll see campaign finance reform in our lifetimes? And of course, the three of us don't have that much time left, but it may be in Andrea's lifetime.
You know, it's interesting. We just saw a big national survey that was done on Washington, putting partisanship aside. It used to be, you know, campaign donors and the campaign finance system. No voter ever cared because they thought everybody did it. And now the notion of corruption in Washington is most fixated on big donors and wealthy donors rigging the process and controlling the system.
Yeah, I do. I think this redistricting reform is starting to actually, people are starting to pay attention to, and it's an issue that people's eyes glaze over when you talk about it, but I think now people understand that when the maps are rigged to keep the party in power, it's a problem. That's not just here in Illinois. It's nationally. Actually, the Republicans, we drew the maps in 2010. That's why there's still a chance we'll keep the House.
Do we know, by the way, if the Fair Maps people are going to reignite their effort?
They did yesterday.
Well, they did.
Yeah.
All right, good.
A big press conference. And actually, the president and former Attorney General Eric Holder, former president.
That's their thing.
That's their big thing.
Well, Dennis Fitzsimons, who used to run this company, was a big mover and shaker on that. So I don't know if he's involved again, but we should check back in with him.
Absolutely.
And it's relevant because we're heading into another census year, obviously. So after the 2020 elections, we will be redrawing maps.
And that's why I do think when you're talking about the speaker, if Governor Rauner wins, I think that should be pretty much the end, because the end at least is in sight, and the people that maybe were hesitant to build that coalition that Eric was talking about to make a change would be more willing to do it if they don't think he's going to be around forever.
It's just surprising to me that in a state that's been run by Democrats forever, that someone who is, say, in their 30s, now they're in their 40s, or maybe they're in their 50s, are going, I've got a limited window to be the speaker. I have the talent. I have the connections. At some point, Madigan's got to get out of the way. I would think someone in the Democrat side in Illinois would go, it's my turn.
I think there's people that probably think that every day. But look, put aside whatever your feelings are for Madigan. He is an unbelievably effective political operative and a politician and a leader, and from the standpoint of understanding where power lies and how to put it together. I mean, he knows how to do this. And it's not as simple as some 30-year-old saying, I'd love to be in power and it's time for new leadership. Somebody has to put that together. And until you're better than the guy that's in power, or you're not going to do it, and that's politics.
Yeah, it's a larger discussion, but I think you and I have talked about this on the golf course, Pat, but there's almost too much access to information now because everybody knows everything. I'm not sure it was all that different when Madigan started, but we had three channels. We had newspapers. Took a while to find stuff out. Now we find out everything every day, some of it true. Because all of that information is out there, this creates this umbrella of it's too corrupt to fix.
Well, along those lines, when I was party chairman, 2008 or 2009, whatever it was, we made a conscious decision that we were going to make that more transparent. Well, how exactly Springfield works, which actually would end up focusing a lot on the speaker since he controls pretty much all the processes down there. So there is a lot of information out there, which is not necessarily a bad thing, I don't think.
Yeah, but when here's why I think it's a bad thing. It's a bad thing because people stop at what they agree with. They don't dig any farther. You know, when you give me some more lemonade on the porch, I'm about to go old man here. Uh-oh. But when you had to read a newspaper to get information. You'd flip through the paper. Just the physicality of that. You'd flip through the paper. You'd see some stuff you agree with. You'd see some stuff you disagree with. Now you're looking at your phone. You're looking at your iPad. You're reading your Facebook feed. You're going to see something you agree with. You're going to read it. You're going to feel better about your point of view, whether it's true or not.
Look, the silos is a huge, huge problem. I think the combination of the siloing of American politics and people just associating with people who agree with them, number one. And number two, the corrosive impact of a president like this who's so demeaning and sets such a bad example for a generation of kids who are going to only have known Donald Trump as president. Those two things, I think, are the most dangerous threats to American democracy. And I don't mean to sound grandiose, but I really think those are the two biggest problems we face. How we get to them, hopefully the legal process will take care of the second. But the first one's a huge problem because of what you said, Steve.
I think it's almost a business problem for the media business, too, to figure out. Right now you go on, you have to pay whatever to get a certain publication. And you'll go there, and I'm going to keep going there because I just paid $9 a month to get it. And I'm not going to go look at a different point of view. I'm going to go with one point of view. And if you don't get something that's somewhat neutral, you're only going to get one point of view. I think I spoke at Benedictine College at the Youth Government Day. And I tell these journalism students, and that was the big question. What's the business model that's going to work so everybody gets a lot of information, not just information they want to hear?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
726, Pat Brady, Eric Edelstein, Dick Durbin, Senator Durbin, in about 12 or 13 minutes. All right, so Pat, I'll have you both put your lawyer pants on again. Yesterday, the Playboy Playmate, who also claims to have had an affair with Donald Trump, won some sort of settlement or a ruling with the National Enquirer. Can you explain what that is and why it's
kind
important?
Of an agreed settlement where they just said that she had a nondisclosure agreement on Trump with the National Enquirer, and she got paid $150,000 for it. And I think the court ruled, or maybe it was just an agreement, that the she can keep her $150,000 and she's not going to get whacked $75,000 for each time she talks about it. So she's free to talk now, basically.
Karen McDougal.
And how does that change things?
She's free to talk.
Whoops, hold on. I got your mic.
I think it was one of those catch and kill stories The AMI or whatever, the National Enquirer thing, they bought it.
Right.
And then she had to sign to say she couldn't talk about it other than with them. And then they just put it in the top drawer.
And they kept her.
Why would they release it with nothing punitive or anything?
I think he just wanted to get out of it. Yeah. And it gets Trump out of it, too. So it's just a settled issue.
Right. How does it get Trump out of it?
Well, because they were going to fight it. So right. Now that would have been Trump would have been in litigation with another person fighting NDAs about some affair he had with a Playboy.
Well, that's where I'm going with this. How does this make Trump's life worse?
Well, she can give interviews and talk about the experience. Before, she was prohibited from really giving in-depth interviews in terms of what happened.
Right, which is why you go to court in the first place. But then that goes back to why give up so easily if you can make it worse for him.
Right. Maybe they've taken enough incoming right now on the same issue that maybe they don't even care. But it doesn't seem to be hurting. Right.
But along this line, isn't there a huge news story, Steve, particularly in this day and age, which for the first time ever... Trump went after Stormy Daniels yesterday.
Yeah.
I mean, he had been... Mm-hmm.
Well, she's going to be in town. I saw on a billboard on the way in.
Oh, yeah?
He's not kidding.
She's coming to town. I'm driving in this morning. Stormy's in town.
She's appearing at a strip club.
Interesting way to advertise. Exactly.
She's making an appearance?
Oh, yeah.
And you're not having her on the show?
We had to get her in.
We made some calls. She's very, very busy at this time. And by the way, what happens if I wear the same outfit that day? And you got nothing but an embarrassing situation.
It would be a mess.
Just don't do it in your front window with people walking by.
I don't do anything right here.
All right. So
I'm not sure if any of this stuff is just politically is hurting him right now. It's just his approval stays between a certain bandwidth of about 4 points up or down, and he's right there now, and it just doesn't seem to be hurting him.
But who's the biggest danger? Michael Cohen?
Cohen.
I think these New York prosecutors are a huge... They're sharks in the water right now.
Yeah, those guys don't do well in prison. He does not want to go to prison.
Let's stick around because we got more to talk about. You want to talk to him
Mayor's race.
Yeah, we'll talk about the mayor's race when we come back. We're going to get Senator Durbin coming up. Hang around for that as well. Headlines next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
All right, back with Eric Edelstein and Pat Brady. A couple of minutes left. And Andrea?
Want to ask you guys about the mayor's race. Okay, Rahm Emanuel, obviously. Gary McCarthy, Paul Vallis, and then Willie Wilson, Jamal Green, possibly Bridget Gaynor hopping in. Is this going to be one of the most crowded fields you've seen? And is that a plus or a minus for Rahm Emanuel?
Well, conventional wisdom says it's a plus to have multiple opponents, because you typically have an incumbent vote and an anti-incumbent vote. But I think there's a lot of chapters that are yet to be played out here, particularly the Van Dyke trial and the police officer that, you know, everyone saw on that tape shot Laquan McDonald. There's going to be a trial this summer. And, you know, the outcome of that trial will have a, I think, a, could have a huge impact on the way this mayoral race takes shape. Will the city be on edge? Will this thing be calmed down and in the rearview mirror? So we have yet to see. But I think conventional wisdom says the more candidates, the better for the incumbent.
Yeah.
Agree?
I agree completely. I think is an add-on to the Van Dyke trial is going to be what the city did after the trial to hide what happened.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a great underreported story as far as I'm concerned, and you've brought it up for months, mm-hmm. and the millions and millions and millions the city has paid out in settlements for abuse by the police or violence from the police that wasn't appropriately dealt with. And again, it's a tiny fraction of the Chicago Police Department ruining it for everybody.
Right, and that's been the practice long before Emanuel. I mean, I'm not...
Well, I'm not blaming Emanuel.
I'm not exonerating him, this has been the sad, sorry state of the way these cases have been handled. The city just budgets tens of millions of dollars every year to pay out in these settlements so they don't have to worry about the high profile of what these potential cases could be. It's terrible.
And also, that video is of that young man being shot is about
ridiculous.
Bad as you can get.
And well, that was the downfall of Gary McCarthy, one could argue. Anita Alvarez, too. But the fact that Eddie Johnson has, you know, increased morale within the department, violent crimes are down when you look at the numbers. So they could definitely be a non-shot there
for
Gary McCarthy.
With those two, probably Anita more than Gary McCarthy, the way they handled it is what the downfall was.
It's hard to see how Gary McCarthy creates a narrative as a mayoral candidate that gets him from out from under that. I just don't get it.
Considering how big an issue that is.
Right.
Well, it doesn't help either when one of the first ads is all about New York. You know, well, in New York, here's what we did, and here's how I did it in New York.
Yeah, I don't think McCarthy leaning on his New York experience is going to help him in Chicago. But if you have 10 candidates or 7 or 5 or whatever the number is, it's very tough not to have a runoff, isn't it?
Right. I think that's that's the downside of it, and I think you are likely to have a runoff situation, and then somebody gets a one-on-one shot against the incumbent mayor, and I think
I think we have recent history on how that worked out when somebody who looked like me said Trump will never be the nominee. But then he eventually gets in, and it's a one-on-one against one of the worst candidates in history, who happened to be fully prepared and then had no idea why she wanted the job other than it was her turn.
Right.
So, I think that's a problem if it goes to a one-on-one.
So when you think about it, really the race in the primary or in the initial round isn't so much against Emanuel as it's sort of amongst all the challengers is who can emerge at second place.
What about Bridget being the only woman?
That would be a huge advantage for her.
Is she going to get in?
I don't know. I think she's looking at it seriously.
Steve, like you, after what happened in the Trump era, I'm out of the prediction game just for a while.
Yeah. I'm scarred, you can tell.
We all are.
I think she'd be thinking about it. The other name that's come up is Lori Lightfoot, who's been thinking about it as well. Yeah. So,
but she and Lori would be great, but she's kind of got the same police issues, doesn't she?
Yeah.
Well, she's been a pretty outspoken critic on the process and some of the things that have gone on. So, I mean, in a campaign, you can say anything you want, but she's been pretty outspoken in terms of the reforms that are needed. But I think there's going to be other names we haven't heard about. I'm not trying to do a tease. I don't know that, but it's a long way till then, and I just think there's a lot.
You get this many people in. Is the perception, is he that vulnerable?
His numbers are better than they've been.
Yeah, I thought
from
he made
what
kind
I've
of
seen.
A comeback.
He's made a little bit of a comeback, and you know, his numbers are stronger. I mean,
did you give him that purple sweater? Was that your idea?
No, I did not.
It was a sporty look. Tuskegee next tomorrow night. I have the honor of emceeing this event. It gives an opportunity for inner city kids to realize their dreams of becoming pilots someday. A great deal. And Tuskegee, the original Tuskegee Airmen, have just a few survivors left, and a couple will be there tomorrow night. What can people do to donate?
Just go to the website. Just Google Tuskegee next and go on the website and donate, or come out to the event, or you can donate at any time, but we'll have a new class starting in June and have a huge, this will be our fourth year, huge success rate.
Cool deal.
Watching these kids go from wanting to be pilots to be pilots in 10 weeks is really something to see.
And the Lincoln Forum, anything coming up there?
Yeah, we have Randy Blankenhorn, head of the Illinois Department of Transportation, and Bob Schillerstrom, head of the Illinois Toll, on May 3rd. Then we have Brett Baer, Fox News, on June 5th. and a couple things that Eric and I was talking about we're working on. So we're going to have a full schedule. Hopefully get some debates, too, some of these candidates coming up. So it's going great.
Maybe an AG debate down the road?
Love to get an AG debate, but I don't know who's running that Kwame campaign. You know, he's got anybody competent around that campaign?
Listen, I got nobody.
I'll make some calls.
Okay, all right. Yeah. Thank you.
You know people that know people.
This is going to be good. Eric's the Kwame guy, and I'm a big Erica fan, so we're going to...
I'm
most looking forward to that.
I know you want more drama. You want more conflict.
Oh, I'm all about that. Yeah, I'm all about
that. I like yelling.
Whenever Sean Hannity and I talk each afternoon, I like to say, Sean, who have you got fighting tonight so I can set it up tomorrow?
Hey, if you watch him with the sound off, it really looks like his head's going to explode.
Yeah. That would be great. That would be good too.
Has anyone figured out what Cohn was advising him on, or has that not been disclosed?
No, but when you only have three clients, it doesn't look good when you go back home. No, really, honey, it wasn't about a woman. Thank you, gentlemen. 803 News Next, 720 WGN.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
813 now. Dean Richards joins us in just a few minutes here, but let me get my friend David Curley in on a vacation day. Nice enough to be on with us. David Curley, ABC News, amongst his beats, aviation expert. And sadly, David, too many times we have to talk to you when something bad has happened, and this Southwest Airlines freak accident is just horrific.
I tell you what, Steve, I mean, you've seen the movies of planes depressurizing and strange things happening, and a lot of it's not true, but to actually, when the report came in that somebody was sucked partially out of an aircraft during a decompression and then died from her, it is unbelievable. And there's still so many questions. We're starting to get a thread of some answers, but they didn't find any parts of that window inside the aircraft. So did it pop out as one? Is there a problem? Was there corrosion around it? How did that happen? That's not supposed to happen, in addition to what happened with the engine and everything else.
People, I think, would like to know that this woman didn't suffer. Is the official cause of death now a blunt head force trauma? And the point of that question being, you know, did she strike her head on the impact?
Blunt force trauma. Was she hit by the debris?
Right.
Or was she hit by the fuselage as she was being pulled out of the aircraft? Don't know the answer to that yet. We may get more details down the road. You know, some heroic work by some of the other passengers trying to get her back in the aircraft and then CPR to try and save her life. It was 22 minutes from the moment of the incident until they got on the ground.
Oh, I did not know that. That's amazing. And that reinforces the narrative about this pilot who's gotten an awful lot of praise worthy of that in the past couple of days.
Don't forget her co-pilot, too.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well said.
It's a two-person crew.
All right. So one of the scariest things that came out of this story was there is a deep dive inspection that has to go on airplanes to see the kind of metal fatigue that may have caused this. Is that still true 24, 48 hours later?
So, yes, to a certain extent. So this incident, according to the NTSB, was metal fatigue at the base of one of the fan blades, and it broke off, and then it caused all the damage that's the cowling that surrounds that engine, and that's, we don't know what actually hit the fuselage, whether it was cowling or the fan blade or what. So in 2016, another Southwest flight had a very similar incident, and it did damage the fuselage, but nothing pierced the fuselage. No window broke out. Nobody inside was hurt. That, too, metal fatigue at the base of the fan blade. So you have two incidents on 737s flying basically the same age engine. No conclusion that they're actually connected. A lot of symptoms that look very similar. So after the 2016 incident, the FAA started making an airworthiness directive, which directs airlines to do something to make sure their planes are airworthy. They ended and closed the comment period because this is all federal rule promulgation. It takes all this time and bureaucratic this, that, and the other thing. Last summer. And they haven't done anything. They never finalized the rule. So now the second incident happens, and the FAA yesterday finally says, okay, in the next 2 weeks, we're going to put out this rule, which is going to require additional inspections on heavily used older 737s. Now, when they were putting the rule together, they said that's 220 engines. There are more than 13,000 of these engines out there on 737s. So that's a pretty small universe at this point. The only question is, they said they're going to put the rule out in 2 weeks. Is it going to expand? Are there going to be more? Is it going to be that small universe? We don't know. I do can tell you that American Airlines tells me that last year when they were putting the rule together, they decided to go check their older aircraft. It was less than 100 for them, so they went and checked their aircraft. What Southwest said after this incident this week is they're now doing enhanced accelerated inspections, and 40 technicians from the engine company are coming to help them. So they've got 109 of those 220, so they're now in the process of looking at those with apparently not grounding, continuing operations.
David, going forward, as far as passengers are concerned, will there be any other safety precautions inside of the plane or any rules for passengers? I know they do the verbal when you're sitting in that particular row. Do you understand? Will you be able to help the other passengers? Anything because of this incident for the passengers?
Not yet. It's too early to know. It's too early to know whether the universe of the aircraft that have to be checked, it's too early to know what happened with that window. But that's another mystery that's, you know, not getting a lot of attention here. But just because of the drama of what she went through, what the other crew members and the passengers went through. So we don't really know the answer to that yet. But I've seen a couple of stories today. I don't know if you've seen it. I don't know if the Trib did it this morning or not. About some of the people not putting their oxygen masks on correctly. Did you see this?
I did, yeah.
Come on, people. There's a safety card that's been in that little seat back every time you've flown. You don't know how to put on a mask? I found that just stunning.
Well, you know, it's human panic, right? And it's also a reminder that the flight attendants aren't doing that drill for their health, and the 30 seconds you need to pay attention matters.
Yeah, and I don't care if you don't watch it. It'll actually watch it once and remember what to do.
Right.
I'm getting a little heated here. Sorry.
No, well, listen, you see it every day, and I understand it. Appreciate your time, my friend. Enjoy the rest of your vacation day now that I've taken your time.
It's just starting now, Steve. I was on Good Morning America. So.
Oh, good. I'm not the only one asking for you. Thank you, buddy. Talk to you soon.
See you later.
That's David Curley, ABC's aviation expert and fine reporter of all the beats that he covers. I was not aware of that news about the window, that they found no shards of a broken window inside the airplane, which leads you to believe, obviously, that the window broke outward or popped off. So they've got to figure out if the impact of this shrapnel from the engine blades was enough to cause the window in that area to pop out. It makes the whole thing even weirder.
Yeah, it does.
Wow. 8:19. I misspoke. Dean's off today as well. He and David Curley are going to enjoy a day at the beach, apparently. Andre, I'll have a couple showbiz stories for you when we come back.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Frank from Naperville knows the airline business, working for United. And what are your thoughts on what Mr. Curley said, Frank?
I believe a lot of his thoughts are accurate. The incident about what you were surprised that no fragments of the window were actually found in the cabin. If you've ever driven a car close to 100 miles an hour and you roll down the window of your car, you know that the force of the wind is going to basically take your arm back if you try to stick it out. Well, imagine an airplane flying at the time of the incident about 500 miles per hour. When this happened, it's not really surprisingly that all those window fragments are just going to be taken by the wind speed of the aircraft.
Yeah, I should have paid more attention to physics, I suppose. But when the fracture in the window takes place, that's at the exact time that the suction would take place, and it would sort of vacuum it up, I guess, from what you're saying, right?
Basically, yeah, because your pressure is... Those windows are very flexible, and because the cabin is being pressurized, the pressure is pushing it outward, and then when you have an obstruction that would cause the fracture or the failure of the window, it's going to be pushed outward. And another thing that I like to have addressed is that this engine that was on this particular aircraft may not have been the same engine that the aircraft came with when it left Boeing factory. These engines are changed all the time.
Oh, really?
They have a bird you might have an ingestion or bird strikes, and you have a serious engine vibration, which would have the ability to have the engine replaced. A lot of times, because of time constraints, it's quicker to get the airplane back into service just to change the engine than to repair the engine.
Wow. All right. Great. Listen, so great information on both counts, Frank, and appreciated. And both make sense. Of course, it doesn't give you a lot of confidence for the inspection process for these engines. Dean's off today. Give me a couple of show business
notes. Well, the Tribeca Film Festival kicked off last night, Steve. Very, very touching film. I love Gilda. The new documentary about Gilda Radner was screened for an audience that included a bunch of her former castmates. And
that's cool.
Past president.
I didn't even know they did this.
Isn't this nice? Tina Fey showed up, Robert De Niro, Chevy Chase, Billy Crystal. And it is going to be coming to Chicago shortly thereafter, too. So watch for that. Really, really cool documentary about Gilda Radner. And of course, Gilda's Club in Chicago, which are friends of the program. They do wonderful things here. So Gilda's Club is featured in that documentary as well.
What else?
All right. Gwyneth Paltrow is sporting some bling, but I don't think this would be in accordance with Mary Sandberg Boyle's very cool engagement rings or wedding rings. She's been she's stepping out wearing some are calling
you just are
no,
always
I'm not, because,
finding a way to suck
no
up
because I know we're going to talk about the engagement ring and then she'll say let's see a picture of the ring.
You're right.
It says it's basically just a gold, it looks like a gold plated ring, those initial rings, you know, pinky rings that a lot of men wear, and it just says BF. It doesn't stand for best friend. It's her fiance Brad Falchuk's initials on her ring. Very non-blingy.
And
Howard University announced that Chadwick Boseman is going to be their commencement speaker at graduation this spring. He, of course, the star of Black Panther, is a graduate from Howard. They're giving him an honorary degree as well. And one more for you. A lot of people handle breakups in very different ways. Jenna Dewan posed in sexy lingerie following her split with Channing Tatum.
Where did that happen, in case I need to research
that
it?
That was on Instagram and Twitter.
Oh,
she was fresh-faced and all smiles, lounging in a plush bed, wearing little more than a matching pale pink lace bra and underwear set. Laughing, though, wanted to show her tan-toned abs. Oh, she also had a casual white wrap on, and of course, what we all do when we pose in sexy lingerie, clutching a coffee mug.
Her kids will be proud.
Yeah, right.
And for you you Homeland fans, I told you guys this off the air. It's breaking entertainment news this morning. Claire Danes is leaving Homeland.
See, I don't know how you're going to have Homeland without Claire Danes.
I don't know. It's like 24 without Kiefer Sutherland. How'd that work out?
Exactly. Sad, sad news. We end on a sad note.
She's having another baby, so that may be part of it. And a Tina Turner musical is opened in London.
Yes.
I don't know if she appears in it, but it's Tina Turner the musical. She will be 79 years old this November.
She looks fantastic.
How about that?
Fantastic.
All right, thanks for that. We'll come back with your headlines next. Again, all of Dean, whether he's here or not, is sponsored by our friends at Brand New Smile Dental Implant Center. Get yourself a brand new smile, because heaven is, well, listen, hasn't it been long enough?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Well, if you paid attention to any form of media in the last few days, you've probably heard or the story of or seen the amazing Aisha Champs, who joins us now. You have become a rock star.
Good morning. How are you?
Well, we're great. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. This is the single mom, graduated from law school, and a big celebration. You had your five kids right by your side. How emotional was that?
Oh, goodness. It's kind of indescribable. It was very emotional, but altogether worth it.
Tell everybody a little bit about your story before you went into law school. What was your life like?
Very different. Growing up, we were placed into CPS, Children Protective Services, because both of my parents were, we lived in a drug-fueled environment. So we were taken from our parents. We were placed in foster care in Beaumont, Texas, and then we were adopted by our maternal uncle. After that, things kind of, didn't work out with him and his family, and we ended up back with our parents, well, with our mom, and due to the fact that she was still, addicted to drugs, we really had no guidance, and I ended up being homeless for a while, and eventually I dropped out of school, so I mean, I'd always aspired to be a lawyer, but I knew once I dropped out of school that that probably would never happen.
Well, I want people to understand this. You dropped out of school. You had no guidance specifically to help you have a normal life as a kid. You're about to enter adulthood. I don't know if you could even see the white lines you probably should have stayed between on the road at that point, whether you're a really good person or not.
Right. You're right. You're absolutely right. I think I just had to grow up really early. I think I just had to adapt to the environment that I was around, which I think I ended up getting comfortable in that environment. And I think that's what really kind of, besides the fact that I didn't really have anyone pushing me, hey, you know, you need to go to school, you need to do this, the environment around me, you know, I'd gotten too comfortable with it. And, you know, I, like I said, I eventually dropped out and I had my first child at 19. So growing up was very, I was on a thin line growing up.
I mean, it was tough.
I'm thankful for being here.
And Aisha, you said since you wanted to be a lawyer since you were 7 years old, and what was the catalyst? When, at what point, and it was about 10 years ago, did you say, you know what, this is it, I'm going back to school?
So in 2007, I started attending this church called Ministers for Christ Christian Center under the leadership of Bishop Richard and Pastor Holman. And they, you know, they welcomed me with open arms. And there was something about this particular church, these particular people, that just kind of grew me to them. And I'd been going there for about 2 years, and then 2009 came. And there was, every single month, there was a tragedy that I had to overcome in 2009. January, we found out I had four children at this time, and the father of two of them, which is the one that I ended up finding out that I was pregnant. In January, we found out that he had cancer. February, my house burnt down. March, I lost my job, found out I was pregnant with my fourth child and me and his second child, and so on and so on. And then he eventually died that same year while I was 7 months pregnant. During that time, my bishop and my pastor, you know, they were there, and she called me prior to him dying, and she said, God told me to tell you that you need to go back to school to get your GED, because that lawyer that you want to be, you're going to be it. And I just kind of chuckled, because I said, I have way too many kids, I'm way too old, and then I'm going through all of this, there's no way I'm going back to school to get, like, being a lawyer was the furthest thing from my mind. So I mean, you know, despite me going through all of that, I was like, you know what? There has to be some type of relief on the other side. So therefore, you know, I was obedient, and I went back to get my GED in the midst of all of that. And when I found out I got it, she said, okay, now you have to enroll in college because you're on your way. And I think that was the catalyst that eventually led me here down this road.
And you know what? I mean, I believe in the power of prayer, and I'm in church most Sundays, as I often say, because I am. But I got to believe when God saw the to-do list on you, Aisha, God went, whoa, I got to take some time on this one.
Yes. And I tell everyone that when I was growing up as a little girl, there's no way I saw this. Where I am now in life, there's no way I saw this. I really thought that the environment that I lived in, that my circumstances were, I thought that that was life for me. So I know that God said, you know, she has no idea what I'm going to do for her, but I'm going to do it so that I can get the glory and so that people will understand that your circumstances does not have to define you. I'm bigger than all of that, and I'm really grateful for it. I'm really, really grateful for that.
And Aisha, your kids stepped up, too. This is a cute story, too. Tell everyone how they helped you study.
Oh, goodness. So, I mean, it was really tough, and there were times when I would cry. I would cry like a little baby in my closet. And my daughter, she was three at the time, she would come in and she like, what's wrong? Why are you crying, Mommy? And do you miss your daddy? Because she knows that my dad and my mom passed away. And I was like, wow. I'm stressed out. And she's like, don't worry. You know, sometimes she would get on her knees and like, can I watch you pray? But my oldest son, he was 12 at the time, and he would, you know, kind of, if they knew they couldn't find mom, they knew she was in the closet crying or praying. And so he would gather all of them together when he heard me crying, or when he saw the light off, but he saw the closet light on, he's like, okay, she must be studying. He would get the kids, he would give them snacks, he would take them to play, he would take them to read, he would even cook food for them. Like, he would boil, it's so funny, he would boil eggs or, you know, cook hot dogs or something. So
what a good little man.
It was amazing. And as he grew older, he would iron their school clothes. And when I came out of the closet from having my little pity party, everything was done. The house was clean. And, I mean, he was amazing. And they would sit as mock jurors for me, even though they had no idea what I was talking about. But I would just reiterate to them what I learned in class that day. And they would just sit there like, okay, Mom, this is just, we don't even understand. But they helped out a lot. They would flashcard me, quiz me, and everything. They were really, really helpful.
Now, he's how old now? He's 14?
He's 14 now. He's in the ninth grade.
Has he expressed any interest in studying the law?
So he did. He said, I asked him, I always ask them, I have them write their goals down. And I said, well, David, I see you changed your goal from becoming a lawyer to wanting to be an entrepreneur. Why? And he said, I did want to be a lawyer, but all you do is read. Like, you don't even have time to do anything like that.
That's awesome. He goes, look, I'm not a fool. I see what's going on.
He said you had a book in like 3 days, Mom. And I was just like, David, don't tell anyone.
David, Davian, Cassidy, Caleb, Imani, and David Jr., by the way, as David Kaplan just said, is now 14 years old, the little man of the house. Aisha, you are a walking, talking miracle. And God bless you and all the people in your lives that have supported you. I said David Kaplan. I meant David Ennett. But all the people that have supported you, all the people that have helped you get here, they're all important. But it couldn't have been done without you believing in yourself. You're obviously an incredibly bright woman. And it's such an inspirational story to know that no matter how difficult your circumstances are, you can do it if you want to.
Yes. All you have to do is put one foot forward and do it. You may fall along the line. Yeah, you may. You just have to get back up and keep going. That's it.
Anything else, Kaplan?
Well, what are your post-graduation plans now?
So after graduation, we do have to sit and we have to go through 2.5 rigorous months of studying for the bar exam. So I do have to do that. Where we'll be studying like maybe 12 to 16 hours a day. I'm going to sit for the Texas bar exam in July. And then after that, I'm hoping and praying to God that I will get an amazing job offer. I can advocate for about, 10, 15 years and eventually become a federal judge.
What? I have no doubt that that's going to happen. There's nobody that can stop you. And your kids sound absolutely amazing in that circle and your church and everything else. And I think you may have an entrepreneurial invention already, what I like to call the Aisha crying closet.
Yeah.
Where when she's stressed out, she just goes in the closet and lets it go for a few minutes.
That's it. Thank you so much.
You have built-in campaign workers, too.
Absolutely.
For when you run
Are
for
you
judge.
Kidding? Absolutely. Those guys. Who's going to stop those guys? Aisha Champs, I wish you nothing but the best. From Houston, Texas to Chicago and back, keep in touch, will you?
Yes, sir, I will. Thank you all so very much.
Imagine the life that she is. She's 33 years old.
Yeah.
Well, my parents are drug addicts. A couple of the dads of my kids died. My house burned down. Oh, and by the way, I'm studying for the bar exam because I graduated law school.
Right.
By the way.
With 5 children.
She is not going to have any trouble getting a job offer or many job offers.
Oh, everybody should.
I bet people are already tripping over themselves to hire her.
Such a good story.
Yep.
Podcast on that will be up in a matter of minutes as well.
Including referring to me.
As David Kaplan.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks. Can't wait.
Well, listen, it's clear I'm losing it. It's just a matter of which day it's going to all be gone.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. I got a new
girlfriend. There's a story right at the top of the show this morning about a couple that was tired of watching their neighbors have sex because they took their window treatments down and they were doing it on the couch with regularity. And I said, really? How's your neighbor? So the text question remains until 10 o'clock. Oh, no, my neighbor's worse than that. What's your bad neighbor done to you? 630, not a lewd thing, but a loony thing. A couple of summers ago on a 100-degree day, my neighbor, while wearing a surgical mask, thought her house was sinking because of the drought and dryness in the soil, started to shovel lava rock from around her house to prevent from sinking. We watched this from the comfort of our air-conditioned home.
Okay. Stop looking at other people's windows.
Well, I just wonder, there's two things here, right? The other thing is, okay, your neighbor's a little nutty, but if this is someone who lives alone and is a little off and is shoveling rock around their house and it's 100 degrees, maybe it's not showtime. Maybe it's, you know, let me take that shovel.
Right. Like, call a doctor.
708, my neighbor shot a BB gun at my three-year-old riding his tricycle in front of the house. What? Neighbor later spent time in prison for a Class X felony.
Oh, okay. That's not funny at all.
No.
I would have had a felony if somebody shot a three-year-old with a BB gun.
Oh. Unless they're on your driveway. No, I'm kidding.
Wait, that's got
Come
nothing.
On. I'm totally just...
But that's got nothing to do with looking out the window or looking across at your neighbors. That's just somebody who's...
Well, but I said, who's your crazy neighbor? Who's your crazy neighbor and what'd they do?
Correct.
708, my neighbor complained that my grass was growing into his grass. That's generally how it works. Mm-hmm. Your grass grows to a certain point, and then somebody else's grass starts. There's really no way to stop that unless you get a Trump wall.
My Trump wall. And even then, it'll take forever to build, so it's a whole other...
I have been told, though, if I want to put up a wall around my property, that the Mexicans will pay for it.
Yeah.
No proof of that so far. 312-981-7200 for you texters from now till 10, your crazy neighbor stories. We'll come back with CLTV joining us in just a moment on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
If you believe they put a man on the moon, man on the moon.
Steve Cochran Show, we continue, 9 o'clock hour. Hi to everybody at CLTV. Thanks for checking in. And John Williams is here. We'll get to John in just a second, but we have another airplane problem.
Yeah, we're following this story. Channel 9 and Channel 5 reporting, Steve, that a SkyWest Airlines flight forced to return to its gate at O'Hare this morning after an issue that may have involved the airplane's engine. This according to Fire Department spokesman Larry Langford. He said that they called for an emergency alert at the airport after an aircraft reported an engine flame out. And this was a SkyWest flight that was headed for Salt Lake City. They had the issue and immediately returned to the gate. That confirmed by Karen Pride with the Aviation Department.
So this isn't a plane that never took off?
Correct, yeah. Okay. It's a SkyWest Airlines flight, was en route to Salt Lake City,
and everybody's
turned
okay.
Back. Everybody appears to be okay. We'll keep you updated, though.
912, John Williams here. Good morning, John. How are you?
Good morning, Steve Cochran. Hi, AD.
Nice to see you.
John.
You know, John, in a world of bad news where we have way too much of it,
yeah.
Do you have any sense of why Alex Jones continues to get publicity?
Well, he's kind of crazy. That helps.
Yeah, I feel that if you give him publicity, the publicity is going to cause him to become more famous and maybe generate a few more knuckleheads that follow him. He's a complete fraud on every level.
What's in your craw about him today?
Everything.
Yeah. No, I saw something trending on him, and I don't remember what it was.
I look up on monitors. We have monitors, television monitors all over that we watch TV.
Oh, the Sandy Hook stuff.
Sandy Hook parents are suing him because he said Sandy Hook was fake. The entire thing was fake.
Yeah.
Little five-year-olds murdered. And
I don't blame them for wanting to do something, but I get your point.
I don't know why we talk about him.
I don't know why people talk about him.
Yeah.
It's just one of the things. I have a list of topics each day that I kind of scratch my head about, and one of them was there's a sponsor boycott of Sean Hannity, and I'm not sure that that's the best way for all of us to settle these scores. If you're mad at Sean Hannity, or if you don't like Sean Hannity,
don't watch
Sean Hannity. But I don't know that trying to financially cripple every voice in America that we don't agree with is the best way for all of us.
I agree with that. I think so much of what Fox has turned into is repugnant to me, but I don't think you should boycott their sponsors. If you want to spend money with them, spend money with them. If you want to watch.
And if they want to not be part of that show anymore, then that's their right, too. I mean, they have every right to back away. I mean, if you don't want your company's logo on Alex Jones' show or Sean Hannity's show, I'm not saying those are the same things, or Rachel Maddow's show, then don't advertise there. Right. And know that if you do, you're going to pay there will be consequences for that. People will judge you accordingly.
Right.
So everybody's just going to be on cooking shows now.
They'll just
be like, Brady Bunch reruns. Yeah. Boom!
You can support a product but not share the belief with the person either. I'll give you a perfect example. I'm a big proponent of MyPillow.
I like my MyPillows.
Oh, God, yeah. Mike Lindell is way over there.
He couldn't be a bigger Trump supporter.
He is a long-distance phone call.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean,
he's just goofy anyway, and I love him. He, and you and I both know him.
Sure.
And he's an amazing success story. He is a terrific guy.
Right.
But he's a little cuckoo bananas.
And not just about the Trump thing.
No, no.
No, he's just wound up.
Yeah.
But a bigger example, too, look at Starbucks right now. They're facing some issues and controversy, but... Are you going to not drink Starbucks anymore because of the actions of, say, one person?
Do you think that
person?
Starbucks' self-imposed correction was too much?
I think they were too fast.
By firing the manager?
No, by doing closing for a day and saying we're going to have a day of training with unconscious bias.
I never even heard the entire story. I just started to hear the apologies before the story was complete.
Yeah,
so.
they jumped on the apologies pretty fast.
Well, good. It makes it sound like Starbucks had a corporate-wide problem. And now when you go, well, who... discriminates against some customers. You go, well, Starbucks. Are you worried about Starbucks?
Right.
And I think they're making their problem worse. Oh, God, this sounds terrible, doesn't it? But I think that the correction is greater than the crime.
Well, that's the thing. Do we know the answer to this question? The two guys that were arrested or put in handcuffs, did they put up some sort of fuss with the police that showed up? Why were they eventually arrested? Because you would think the police would come in.
They were very chill when the cops got there.
Yeah.
But you would think the police would say, get out of here, guys.
Well,
why does it have to go to an arrest?
I know. Why couldn't it have come to that?
Their police commissioner, to his credit, their commander commissioner, put out a Facebook Live video, and he said, I wanted to put this out so it wouldn't, he wouldn't be barraged with questions. He said, here is my statement. And it was like a 10-minute, almost uninterrupted press release where he said, here is what happened. And he went detail by detail saying that the police were called here because an employee said their policy was that you have to order something if you want to use the restroom. And they came in and they sat down at the table and wanted to use the restroom without ordering anything.
And so they said, my friend is coming.
Yes,
we're waiting.
My friend is coming. And then the manager or the employee from Starbucks said, you have to order something. They called the police. The police came in and, just knowing what they knew at that point, said, okay, what are you doing here? Why aren't you ordering something? You're going to either have to order something or leave. And the police commissioner details this in his statement. And he says that these two men said, no, we are not leaving. And they said, please order something or leave, repeatedly.
So that's when they were arrested.
And then they wouldn't order anything.
And those two guys could have caved. But
yeah,
they also know in the back of their head that if they look like any of us in this room right now, they would not be in that predicament.
I don't know that that's true. Yeah. I think it depends on the
you
Starbucks.
Think the cops I think you or me and walk us out of there?
Less likely. Certainly less likely. But I think this is the part I was trying to get to. Is there a side to that manager story that wasn't given any air at all? In other words, I'm just doing my job.
Right.
We have a policy. You have to order something or not. And if you don't, I'm going to call the police.
That's the most violated policy in the world. Starbucks are office space.
Yeah, they're ridiculous.
Right.
They kind of created this culture, you know. It's a weird way and time to enforce it.
Oh, I started to tell the story the other day. I saw something the other day that was amazing to me. Morning, I ended up going to a Chili's. We're walking out of the Chili's and coming out of the restaurant, and a family's coming in. And three of the kids in the family are carrying McDonald's Happy Meals.
No.
No.
Into the restaurant.
You don't get to do that.
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, every restaurant has their policy. You can't bring other people. How many times, though? I mean, I told you guys this, too. When we're out for Channel 9 covering stories, we always stop at usually a Starbucks, but always buy something just because personally, I don't want to go in and use a restroom if I'm not going to buy something.
You stop there to use the restroom, and then you buy.
And I
same thing.
Coffee.
I did that
always.
The other day.
Same thing. If you're going to use the potty, pay.
Absolutely.
The other day, all of my devices, the batteries, I have no power. So I thought I'll pop into the Starbucks and just sit there, plug them in, warm them up, get them going. It was so cold, the batteries drained fast here in April. And so I thought, okay, let's go ahead and do that. I bought a small coffee. I thought that was... I didn't really want a small coffee, but I just thought that was the
think you have to
the price to pay. But again, they don't force
you didn't have to do that, but it's reasonable for you to do it.
But you know what? It is Starbucks, so this will be the great test of America's you know, a fight in this. Are you really going to stop drinking your coffee? Are you?
I happen to be carrying a Starbucks right now.
Let me get this. Nancy, your son manages a Starbucks?
Yes, he does. And I called him up to tease him the other day, say, oh, you're getting a day off for training, huh? And he said, no. He said, you know what? Starbucks is being very proactive. This was specific to this Starbucks. It isn't a widespread issue. But he said they took culpability in this whole thing,
and they want to train all the employees to be more tolerant and to allow anybody to use their bathrooms and anybody to sit in their stores. And they're actually just taking the initiative to make sure that they are widespreadly trained so an incident like this never happens again.
Right. Well, from a corporate standpoint, and thank you for the phone call, from a corporate standpoint, I understand that, but I do think private businesses are entitled to their policies.
This is going to bite them in the butt.
Oh, I agree. And I think
I'm going to go there and shower tomorrow.
I was just going to say, think about the dangerous precedent, and I have seen this. I have seen this at a Starbucks location in the city, which is not very far from us, which some people or patrons, I wouldn't even say patrons, use as they bathe and they clean up and whatnot. I mean,
they hang out, it's warm. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're going to set a dangerous precedent if you just start letting anybody in.
Well, did you guys look up the statute in Illinois for use of a public restroom? No, a private business restroom, like a Starbucks or a McDonald's. There is a statute in Illinois that details when they have to make it available to the average Joe, paying or not. I mean, it's all laid out in law.
Like what
is the law?
It's complicated. It's more than I can remember. But for instance, do you provide for more than three employees a private bathroom? Yes or no? If so, then do you make it available to the public? If you have more than three employees, there's this whole rubric that they have to follow. But the law, and I don't know what it would be for a Michigan Avenue Starbucks, what the law would say, but I understand how you don't want to be a free public restroom.
But here's the thing.
Absolutely.
The Starbucks is a business that serves beverages and some food. Next to the Starbucks at every corner is an office. Am I entitled to walk into somebody's private office to pee?
Right.
I mean, where does it end?
No kidding. And think about when we have parades in the city, too, as well.
Oh, is
it just going to be like waiting in line to use, and not just Starbucks, Dunkin' Donuts, Pete's Coffee. Pick any place.
Have Dave read the law. He's got the statute in front of him.
I love when Dave reads laws to me.
Yeah. Boy, if this ain't good radio, I don't know what it is.
Customer retail establishment, customer access to restroom facilities. Let me condense it. Section 1, customer requesting the use of the employee toilet facility suffers from an eligible medical condition or utilizes an ostomy device.
Right. If you have an ostomy device, you get to use it.
Yeah, seems fair.
Three or more employees of the retail establishment are working at the time the customer requests use of the facility.
All of these have to be in play.
The retail establishment does not normally make a restroom available to the public.
Wait a minute, hold on. Does not normally make it available to the public, but I've walked in, now you have to.
Right, and I've met the first three criteria.
The facility is not located in an area where providing access would create an obvious health or safety risk to the customer or security risk for the establishment.
Like the bathrooms in the kitchen?
But,
right.
But okay, risk. But that's a good point, because what if John Williams, what if you and John, Steve, walk into my establishment and I fear you? I mean, because you guys are big,
are you
strong,
entitled to say, don't
people
pee in here and leave?
Do I consider that a risk?
I think that's why they have three or more employees there. But this is also like for somebody who's in a medical emergency.
Right.
There's some people who, I forget what the condition is, but you have to go to the bathroom right now.
Yeah.
And so this would apply.
But this is another one of those things that I think that most people would apply common sense to.
You would think.
If I went in and just go, please, I'm sorry, I give them the key.
Right.
Number five was a public restroom is not immediately accessible to the customers. So that gets back to Article 1, Section 1.
Craig, Regina, Brian, and Emmanuel. Hold on. I'll try to get to you in just a second. John Williams joining us for our new regular feature, Potty Talk. Let me go to Craig on this, talking about the Starbucks story this week. Hey, Craig, what's up?
Yeah, I'm a rideshare driver, and I'm a 60-year-old white guy.
Okay.
I have been in three different establishments in the Chicago area. One, a Dunkin' Donuts. One, a mobile gas station convenience store.
Right.
And the other, a pizza place. And all three have denied me use of the bathroom until I made a purchase. And I even went to the point of saying, I'm going to buy something. I just don't want to buy it and take it in the bathroom.
That's a good point.
Well, that's a fair point.
You know, but they have all denied me use of the bathroom.
But why couldn't you buy a drink and they hold up to the counter until you come out?
They don't want to be responsible for it. Once you buy it, you have to take it. And I actually did try that.
You know what I'd say, Craig? I'd go, I'm never going to pee here again. I am going to take my problem elsewhere. Thank you for the call, man.
I appreciate Steve Cochran, and you are going to be sorry the day I do.
Regina.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. I am 51 years old, and in my work, I meet with a lot of people in their 20s and 30s. We network. We meet in Starbucks and other cafes, and about half the time, I'm the only person who buys anything.
Yeah.
And I've talked to this with other people, like in their 20s. Just yesterday, I was talking to a young white man who's 25 years old, and he was totally like, right, you don't have to buy anything.
That's
you can
ridiculous.
Just sit there.
It's ridiculous.
So it's totally, it seems to be a total change in the culture that you believe you can just go there and sit there. And apparently cafes allow that, like Starbucks, just sit there for hours and
well,
hours.
Yeah, but it sounds like Starbucks is going to turn it into their policy. And thank you for the phone call. But is there something going on where millennials feel they have a right to sit anywhere they want?
Yes.
Okay.
As the parent of a couple. Now you.
I was just curious.
Hey, millennials, give us a call. But guess what? You're wrong.
Brian.
Hi there. 43 years in the restaurant business, and I admonish any franchisee of mine that pulls this garbage. We all need to use a restroom. It's a natural function. I don't propose that anybody opens up their back room for people coming in, because that's just too dangerous in this day and age. But for crying out loud, we're talking about the exception, not the rule.
Well, listen.
Instance has a great reputation for having clean restrooms. When I'm traveling,
right.
My wife insists on stopping at a McDonald's. Yeah. Ladies like a clean restroom.
Yeah.
I don't particularly care because I'm not touching anything.
Oh yeah, listen, dude. We have it easy, but and I respect your experience and obviously your opinion as well. But somebody has got you. Got to pay for somebody to clean the restroom. Aren't you entitled to ask for a purchase?
Well. The thing is not about the immediate purchase. It's about the future purchase. Those guys are never going to go to Starbucks again. And people that are hearing this story are just not going to go to Starbucks. It's a ridiculous risk to take for such a minute inconvenience.
Well, I love this guy, Steve.
No, I appreciate the call. Common sense, man. Common sense.
Lock the restrooms and give people a key so you can know who's damaging something if that's what happens. In the city of Chicago, in certain neighborhoods, there's a problem with gang graffiti in restrooms.
Yeah, and also if you take the key, tie it to a giant cinder block.
Yeah, a stick.
Right. Thank you, man. I appreciate the phone call.
You should advocate. I mean, you are sort of saying, well, if the business doesn't want to do it, then go find a public restroom. And Andrea and I think there are no... Where's the nearest public restroom around here?
No, but I agree with... That's common sense. I agree with
what
you said.
Tell me what your theory is, though, Andrea, for using a hotel.
Oh, you can walk into a hotel and use the bathroom, but like you and I said, John, you have to act like you belong.
Yeah.
Well, that's how I live my life anyway. I walk around like I have a clipboard and I'm backstage.
Oh, the conference starts at 8:30.
Yeah.
Even though you're talking to yourself.
And you've got your 3-year-old, right. Power walking through the lobby.
Right.
I'm going to run out of time here. Emmanuel, last call. Go ahead, man.
Okay. My take on the entire Starbucks issue, I'm an armed security guard. I'm also a 33-year-old black male.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see an issue with companies, especially companies like Starbucks, having a policy in place that you have to be able to make a purchase in order to use the restroom. But when it becomes a double standard, kind of like not the Philadelphia incident, but the LA incident, where you have one individual who's allowed to go in to use the restroom, but another individual who isn't.
It's a civil rights issue.
Yeah.
And it seems to be based off of, just the color of skin. And, I really try not to pull the whole race issue. But you guys did make a point earlier on the show that, if the young men in Philadelphia who were waiting on their friend looked like you guys,
mm-hmm.
then there may not have been so much of an issue.
It's possible, and that's why in part, and thank you for the phone call, Starbucks is doing their training and taking the afternoon off at someday coming soon.
May 29th, I believe it is.
Oh, it's the end of May.
Yeah.
So they're getting ready. Stock up on your coffee until then. All right, so we'll agree to disagree, but I believe I should have to pay to pee.
Well, it's your show, but on my show, you'll be able to use the...
Free pee.
We're going to open up the... The Tribune lobby. Come on in.
The day before we leave the building.
Yeah. Our Cracker Jack security staff, nobody can get by them.
No, including us sometimes.
Yeah.
You're on today at 1. What time's Saturday?
Saturday, 10 a.m. till noon. Steve Cochran, thank you for letting me play with you guys.
Thanks
good
for
show.
Coming
good
in.
Show.
All right. We're back with the news next. 720 WGN.
On 720 WGN.
Is this the big man? Is this a big man on Arsenio? Bill Clinton may not have won the White House in 1992 without this appearance. With his Ray-Bans on, looking cool.
Arsenio Hall changed late night. Absolutely changed late night. First guy to put on hip-hop. First guy to put on rap. Legitimized for the rest of the country. Took some grief for it. Ladies and gentlemen, Arsenio Hall! Wow, I almost hurt myself, man.
You know what that proves, though, Steve? It proves you're not a weed smoker because you held that O.
When my daughter was little, she would love to stay up late with her dad, and she'd woof.
Hey, so she'll feel comfortable in Cleveland when she goes to a football game. Hey, Steve. Oh, what, I heard you say the glasses, those Ray-Bans, those were mine.
I knew that. Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, and
that was kind of cool.
What wasn't a story before you go? You got to have these. You got to add these because he wasn't going to wear anything, right?
Right, he wasn't going to wear those, and he also changed his tie and put on one of the ties that I had in my dressing room. And here's something that I learned more recently through Stephanopoulos and a bunch of guys who were working back then. The whole idea to come on the show was Hillary's idea.
I've heard you tell that story. I did not know that, and that's just one more thing Hillary should have mentioned when she was running in 2016, because what a cool thing to do.
Hey, what's deep is that Hillary is a great advisor, but she can't win an election to save her life.
Right. Amen to that, man. Amen to that.
Everybody beats Hillary. But, you know, that's the fun thing about being out doing stand-up. I get to talk about stuff on stage, and the people I talk about, I know them. I know Hillary. I know Donald Trump. I was on Celebrity Apprentice. I won Celebrity Apprentice,
right.
Steve. I spent a lot of time with him. When I had to choose between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, that's like asking me who my favorite Menendez brother is. Okay, I know them both. I'm a Republican. Neither was my choice.
That's
by the way, hello, Andrea. I don't want to ignore Andrea. Hey, Andrea.
Arsenio, you're the best. I love you.
Oh, that's fantastic.
We're laughing about the Menendezes because I'm going Eric.
Yeah. Oh, you would have gone Eric. Yeah, you would have gone
just
Eric.
For Arsenio's sake, just for the sake of the combo.
Because Andrea doesn't like toupees, so she's going to go with.
Well, she's working with she's working with a bald guy. Here's the deal. You can get up close to Arsenio like never before if you go to Zanies and Rosemont. It's my favorite Zanies room, Rosemont room. You're going to love it. 8 o'clock, 10 right and 10:30 Friday night, 7 and 9:30 on Saturday night. It's all part of the Return to Stand-Up tour. Did you miss it? Did you feel like I got to get out there and do it again?
Oh, yeah. You know, especially black men don't go to therapy, so we need some outlet where we can talk to people. So, black men go to the barbershop and talk, or you have to do stand-up, one of the two. So I'm happy to be doing it again. And I was talking to your producer. She was telling me I should have flown in, and I wanted to let you know, you know I'd love to be there with you guys.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm doing today? This is so much fun, Steve. I got to tell you what I'm doing.
Okay, go ahead, man.
I'm going to a meeting. I'm going to a meeting at Paramount, and when the meeting's over, I'm going to take away pages of Coming to America 2 because we're getting that.
Ah, that's great news.
I'm so excited.
That's tremendous news. Yeah, fantastic.
Cool. And you know, it was something that I don't know, Eddie loves the movie, and he never wanted to do a sequel. He never wanted to mess it up. He wanted to leave it like it is. It's his baby. And then one day, we're hanging out, and I said, you know, I'm doing stand-up, man, and I'm loving being out there. It's so cool to get to different cities and meet the people who've made you who you are. And he said, man, I was watching on the internet, and they dressed up a restaurant as McDowell's on Halloween.
Right,
and he said, I can't believe people still love that movie. And he went and took a meeting at Paramount and said, let's do a sequel. Let's do it. And I'm excited. They hired the guy who wrote Girls Trip, the movie for Queen Latifah and Tiffany Haddish and the girls. And he also is the guy who penned Blackish for ABC.
Wow.
The sitcom. So he's a really funny guy, and I'm happy with all the ideas I'm seeing. And I just wanted you to know,
it's fantastic.
If it wasn't for something that important, I would have flown in and made Andrea coffee this morning.
Oh, I'm here for you.
Always a friend of the show for years. Hey, here's the thing. Do you think Eddie would ever go back out? Because you and Eddie on tour, I mean, come on.
Steve, let's see, that's you know, great minds thinking alike. We actually, when I started doing stand-up again about 4 years ago, the plan was for us to both go out, and we had gone to see his brother Charlie Murphy, and really were like, "Oh, Charlie seems to be having so much fun," and we'd go to these clubs and watch Chappelle try some stuff out, and we were gonna both go out, but Eddie got more money than God, okay? And it's hard to get Eddie to go out at 10 o'clock to a club and work on your 5 minutes because Stormy Daniels just,
I get it. Her thing. I get it. Eddie and I are the same age. The only difference is Eddie rolls around in his hundreds and giggles, which is okay.
Big ups, RIP, to Charlie Murphy, who passed away since we had that plan, and God bless him. He was a funny man, Eddie's brother.
Very, very funny guy. And you know what the reason I was thinking about you and Eddie is, I don't know if you saw the Shandling documentary that's been running on HBO that Judd Apatow did.
Yeah, Judd Apatow, yeah.
But there's a chunk in the second part of that where Jerry Seinfeld and Gary Shandling and I can't remember who else was there, but like three killer stand-ups getting together.
Was it Saget or somebody?
Wasn't Saget, but just killer stand-ups getting together, and that's the kind of thing. So, yeah, we may not get Eddie to do it, but I would love to see you and Eddie. Who wouldn't?
Hey, by the way, you know I started in Chicago, and I know a little bit more about Chicago than the average Clevelander.
Yep.
You did stand up at one time.
Still doing it, yeah. And
yeah.
It doesn't quite go with this show, you know, a little too early for that being too late, but we have a good time. 5 or 6 shows a year. What about other movies and TV stuff for you? You thinking about it?
Yeah, you know, I just finished working on something with Reverend Run, who's playing a retired rapper over at Netflix.
Run DMC.
Yeah, he's kind of approaching reality a little different. He had a reality show with his family. They're about to do a new spin on that. So I was over helping him out, and because they had never done scripted, they had always done reality, you know. So over there helping them, having some fun, doing a bunch of stuff, man. I'm having a really good time for OG.
By the way,
you're not an OG.
By the way, white people, OG, original gangster.
I thought it was old guy.
Well, no, you're talking to me.
I'm the view. Arsenio, I just have to tell you, the feeling, I know you're so successful in stand-up and comedy and movies and stuff, but I always loved, what I loved best about you was your interview style. You got rid of the desk, you sat right next to your guest, and you had just a warm, warm interview style, which I always have loved and emulated. So, thank you for that.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I've been on the couch without a desk with a lot of wonderful people. I've had a blessed life. I think one of the things that I was talking to a friend about the other day is getting the last late night interview with Prince, because I did a reboot of the show for about a year, and it was so incredible to have those kind of experiences when somebody leaves this earth. You know, my last interview with Maya Angelou, I actually did by phone because she was still sick, you know.
Right.
And sometimes you get these special things that stick to your ribs, you know. And it's been a wonderful life, and I ain't finished, Andrea.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too, and I'll let you go on this, but that Prince interview, because, you know, I spent years in Minneapolis and knew him a little bit, but getting Prince to talk in more than 2-sentence chunks, that's a little bit of magic, because he loved you.
Yeah, he was a good friend, man. He was a funny guy, too. That's
why
I was trying to get out, getting to talk about cooking and all this stuff, because Prince is a normal guy, and watching Prince cook eggs is hilarious. And some of the stuff, the parties he used to have, he's a real cool guy. Prince actually sent me a suit one time. He said, I complimented him on his suit. And we were laughing because we were doing the MTV Awards, and that was the year he didn't have no butt in his pants, right?
Right, the buttless yellow chaps.
Yeah, exactly. So one day I get a black and white suit, and it's beautiful. It looks just like the ones his background dancers had on.
Yeah.
And I didn't pay attention. You know how sometimes you unzip the front and you look at the suit, and I'm like, this is cool. I put it in the closet. One day my housekeeper says, do you know if there's no ass in that suit? And I said, excuse me? She took the suit totally out of the suit bag. There was no back. There was no ass. The collar was missing. It was the funniest suit
I've
ever
tremendous.
Seen in my life. And it was his get back at me for teasing him about his chaplain yellow pants.
I'm telling you, he was. You're exactly right. He's a funny, funny dude.
And you've never worn your backless pants either.
I have, but, you know, I got that
Andrea,
flat butt, you know.
Andrea?
Yeah.
Andrea, you spoke too soon. I'm standing in them right now.
Oh, you're wearing them? Okay. Yeah. That's good. Arsenio, I love
interview in them.
Skype.
Arsenio, love you, man. We'll see you at Rosemont this weekend.
Thank y'all. See you soon.
All right, buddy. That's Arsenio Hall.
Oh, he's so sweet.
Friday night, 8 o'clock and 10:30, and Zany's Rosemont on Saturday at 7 and 9:30. I don't know if there's any tickets left, but it's worth checking. You ought to do it right now at zanies.com, because all four of those shows will sell out.
He is so genuine. I mean, he's such a genuine.
Well, he's a big deal, too.
Guy.
Yeah, I mean, you can literally be, you'd be sitting there, you'd be sweating on you if you're sitting up front.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Bill Winnier, your bad neighbor texts. We didn't get time to get to the a lot of these, so I apologize, but here's a couple more. I had a neighbor who put mulch on half of the circle around the tree that crosses our border because he didn't want to mulch my half.
Oh, please.
Because mulch is so expensive.
6-3-0, my neighbor complained that our whirly birds from our maple tree were falling in the yards, and we had to pick them up one at a time. What do you call those things? The helicopters.
Those helicopters.
The helicopters.
Are they
pods.
Called whirly birds? I don't know what they're called.
Seed pods.
We all knew what you meant.
Yeah. 727, our neighbors growing up mowed their lawn every time my parents had a party, including on Saturday nights.
Wow.
Don't invite me? Listen to this. What are you guys doing today?
Cutting the lawn. Is it springtime?
Going to be 60s next week.
Can yeah, ask, so they say.
What happened earlier in the show when David Kaplan stopped by for a few moments?
We were all surprised.
Strangest moment.
I'm going to be honest. We were all surprised.
I guess.
Yeah, it was a shockaroo. So.
Did he think the Walk of Fame ceremony was today?
You know, that may have been it.
I bet he came in thinking it was today.
He wandered in sort of glassy-eyed like we saw him for years here, and then he took off.
That's David Kaplan,
ridiculous.
All right.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, he was looking for... He called me Sparkles, and he was looking for a reflective surface to look at himself, and then he left.
During the show today, I had George Orta on for 42 minutes. George Orta, 42 minutes.
My guy.
Yeah, he's my guy.
He interviewed Oscar Gamble's hair a week ago. Nobody's doing that. Hey, see you tomorrow.